Welcome to another edition of Out the Gate, the podcast about sailing and adventure on and around San Francisco Bay. Treasure Island was created in 1937 using dredged sand and quarried rock, and when it was made, a small cove was created between it and Yerba Buena Island. Treasure Island was initially intended as a second airport for the Bay Area, and while that never happened, the cove was used as a kind of airport by Pan Am Airlines. It was a terminal for the Clipper flying boats, which is why today it's called Clipper Cove. So Clipper Cove is the largest, most well-protected cove on the San Francisco city shoreline. And it's a beautiful little anchorage with a beach at the head. And I had a great evening there last year when I was cruising around the bay in a dinghy. I anchored out next to a little Pacific Sea craft being single-handed by a woman who was preparing to sail to Hawaii. We struck up a great conversation. And when I was coming in the cove that night, I sailed through a fleet of boats being sailed by young kids who all waved as I passed. And they were all from the Treasure Island Sailing Center, which is located on Clipper Cove. And its mission is to provide facilities, sailing instruction, and access to the water for people of all socioeconomic backgrounds, abilities, and skill levels from novice to Olympian. Travis Lund has been the executive director at the Treasure Island Sailing Center for nearly 5 years. Travis and I met up at the center, and driving onto the island to get there, I had to dodge excavators hauling dirt and take a detour just to get over to the center, because right now a massive redevelopment is underway on Treasure Island and Yerba Buena Island. There are plans for luxury condos and a fancy new marina catering to mega yachts. And exactly what impact this is all going to have on the sailing center isn't clear. It'll mean new facilities for the center, but it also might mean more traffic on Clipper Cove and less space, depending on just how big that new marina is. Travis and I talked about the center, the coming changes, sailing on the bay, and plenty of other things. So take a listen and enjoy.
My name is Travis Lund. I'm the executive director of the Treasure Island Sailing Center.
And describe where we are.
We are at officially at 698 California Avenue in San Francisco. We are on the northeast corner of Clipper Cove, which is a cove that's made up between the natural island of Yerba Buena and the man-made island of Treasure Island, and we're on the back side of the causeway that connects those two land masses, and that makes up Clipper Cove in between.
Tell me a little bit more about Clipper Cove and why it's such a special place.
Clipper Cove, it's a man-made cove. Ultimately, I think it was around the completed around the 1906 World's Fair, and what's interesting about Clipper Cove and why it makes such a good training ground for small boat sailing is because it's on the back side of the causeway, and so it's protected from all of the sea state or the waves that are coming off the main bay, and provides a little protection from the wind. So we get about 75% or 80% of the wind that comes off the bay, not all of it. And we don't have any of the sea state gets blocked. So, you know, in a typical sunny San Francisco day when it's blowing 20 to 24 out in the bay, we probably have 15 to 18 in here. And where they might have, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 feet of chop, we have 6 or 8 inches tops. And the cove itself is only 8 to 14 feet deep. And so the water temperature is a little bit warmer as well. And because it's that shallow, we don't see a lot of current within the cove. You know, the water goes up and it goes down, so it comes in and out a little bit, but it doesn't rip like it does at the head of the cove, where it's 60 or 80 feet deep in the shipping channel, where it goes left to right. It makes for a wonderful training area for youth or adults who are just learning to sail as well.
It's unique in the San Francisco Bay. I mean, so much of the bay, you go out and you are in it right away.
Yeah.
To have that kind of protected area
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a we call it the little gem of the bay. And oftentimes I'll tell people where I work, and I'll say, yeah, I work at the Treasure Island Sailing Center. And they go, where is that? And I said, well, it's on Treasure Island. And they drive right by it, you know, every day, 5 days a week, you know, on their way to San Francisco from the East Bay. If they just look off their right shoulder, they'd see us down there. It's little known, and probably because the island has been more or less vacant, other than a couple of thousand residents who live here and a handful of businesses. And I say it's our little village in the middle of Metropolis. It's a pretty special little place, and we're looking forward to not only this summer, but to, you know, 20 summers from now when the island is developed and it becomes a vibrant neighborhood of San Francisco.
Let's dive into the Treasure Island Sailing Center. You're the director, and how long have you been here?
4.5 years.
It's a nonprofit. Tell me about the purpose of the center and what you guys do here.
Well, the mission of the Treasure Island Sailing Center is to provide both access and sailing instruction to people of all socioeconomic
backgrounds,
thank you, ability levels from novice to Olympian. The core of it is we try to outreach to those folks who, one, may never have thought that they had the opportunity to do something like sailing, and provide that activity for them, or those who might have some constraints both physically or what have you, and use sailing as a way for a therapeutic exercise. Also for our kids, the act of sailing or learning to sail has a lot of human benefits. You know, we learn things like goal setting and teamwork and grit and communication, good decision making, self-control, respect for one another, and work ethic. And so those things, if you are a skilled and accomplished sailor, you look back, you can point directly to the experience of learning to sail that provided a lot of those skills for you. Embedded in all our curriculums and teaching people to sail, we intentionally reinforce those character building qualities. We tease those out a little bit in our curriculum so that we make sure that the kids are in fact getting that. So I'm less concerned with teaching a kid how to sail than I am developing and nurturing human beings.
There's still this perception that sailing is something for the wealthy, for the elite. So giving that access must be
important. It's tremendous. You know, it's you know, we about 85% of our participants come directly from the city of San Francisco, and it's about 2,500 kids a year. They live on a peninsula surrounded by water on three sides, and hardly any of the kids that we have here, especially when they come here for the first time, have had no experience in a boat, maybe not in a small boat. Maybe they've been on a ferry. I've had teachers come over in our STEM program and tell me, you know, hey, Travis, this was great. This is the first time any of my kids have been on a bridge. And even though they live in the city, and the only way to get out of the city on at least two sides is to cross some sort of a bridge. So their exposure to the water is very little. By giving them even just the access for one day to it and the enjoyment of being on a boat and enjoying their surroundings that they live right next door to, in some way we feel that providing that stewardship gives them the sense that they have some ownership of it. They have some control in their decision making as it relates to the bay long term. So a little introduction goes a long way to helping the quality of the bay for years to come.
Tell me about your introduction to the water and to sailing.
I grew up in a little small industrial town in northern Michigan. It still only has about 22,000 people, and it's the largest city within 100 miles in any direction on the eastern side of Michigan, on the western shore of Lake Huron. My father had bought, right when he got back from serving in Vietnam, bought a Cal 25 in like 1972 or 3, and that's the boat that we had growing up. My dad was a skilled sailor and a racer, and I think he felt fortunate because I really loved to sail. I spent all kinds of time sailing with him, and by the time I was 15, he was allowing me to take the boat out with my friends and do Wednesday night races, and by the time I was 17, I was basically living on it all summer and had gained enough skill that other sailors were asking me to do major races around the Great Lakes and whatnot. I got my first job working at the local marina. At 12 years old, I was cutting the grass because they I think they felt sorry for me because I was constantly just hanging around, you know, by the time I was 15, 16, I was driving a travel lift, and that was my summer job there. So I never really went anywhere that it wasn't around water. And even though Minnesota is the land of 10,000 lakes, I think Michigan has a few more lakes even. So my childhood was really being outdoors, and we look forward to sailing all the time. And so I was that guy, taught all of my friends how to sail, dozens and dozens of people, kind of what I did.
What was it about the sailing? What was it when you were that young that really you said, this is what I want to be doing?
I think it was a combination of things, one of which would have just been freedom. The freedom you feel when you're out on the water, there's no lines in the road. There's nobody telling you what to do or where to go. And so when we were out free sailing, and I was fortunate, my parents felt very confident of my skills in the boat, so they'd allow me to go out. And in fact, my mother would say, well, I feel much more confident Travis being out in the boat at 10 o'clock at night than driving around with his friends at 11 o'clock at night, and at 16 years old. And so I was fortunate in that. It was an escape for me. It provided freedom. And that I was a skilled sailor at an early age allowed me to practice my leadership skills, and that's something that I kind of naturally grew into. I enjoyed teaching people, and I enjoyed leading.
So how did your sailing lead you to San Francisco Bay?
I would say in my early 30s, I made some personal changes and started reconsidering where the direction my life was heading at, and at the time I was still living in northern Michigan, where I could only sail 3 or 4 months a year. Kind of on a whim, or maybe I had an epiphany, I decided that I would move somewhere that I could sail at least 9 months a year. And so I began looking for jobs around the country. I was offered a job with a local sailing school here in San Francisco that also had an office in Puerto Vallarta.
That's the J-World
School? The J-World School, yeah. I sold everything I owned. I hopped on a plane with 2 bags. I shipped my bike in a box ahead of me. I got off the plane having never been here before or knowing anybody who lived here whatsoever. And the first thing I said when I walked out of the airport was, geez, it's really cold here. I didn't imagine it would be this cold. And somebody said, well, it's not Southern California. And I said, oh, okay. And so I spent 3 years basically going in between San Francisco and Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. And then from there, one thing led to another. And, I worked for Sunsail, the moorings, for a period of time. I got transferred to Miami for about a year and a half. And then that's when I got this job, because I was itching to come back to the Bay.
You left warm Miami to come back to San Francisco.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Warm was, being a boy from northern Michigan, where I get 4 seasons, the tropical conditions of Miami didn't suit me that well.
But what was it that pulled you back? What did you fall in love with here in San Francisco, both in terms of the city and then sailing?
It's a world-class city with so many options of things to do and go, and all the richness of the multiculturalism that's here. But the sailing, it's a sailor's paradise. It's a natural wind machine here. Everywhere you look is an iconic postcard picture. There's nothing not good about sailing here in the Bay, other than sometimes when you're actually sailing, you might feel like, well, Jesus, isn't that fun? But, when you get off the water and in retrospect, it's always a tremendous experience.
What surprised you and what was most challenging when you first started sailing on San Francisco Bay?
The currents. Being a Great Lakes sailor, even when I lived in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan and did a fair amount of sailing on Lake Superior, where there is about a 6-inch tide, the currents in the bay flummoxed me for the first year I was here. I didn't have a handle on how complex the currents were in the bay. I'd never really sailed in currents. I'd sailed in rivers before, but it's not, the water's always moving in the same direction for everybody. And so I was a racing sailor, and I've always been a racing sailor, so racing on San Francisco Bay was quite challenging for me, and so I had to spend a fair amount of time on the water studying the current flows and the different patterns to wrap my head around how they worked.
Do you still get to race a bit?
I don't sail as much as I used to, that's for sure. I do own an Etchell sailboat, and I participated in the Worlds a couple of years ago and the North Americans before that. I took last year off think just because we were worn out from doing those campaigns a couple of years, but I'll plan to get back in the boat here, and I'll do a little sailing out of the center as well. But I still enjoy sailing, and I just, you know, now that I'm running the center, I'm responsible for all of the other sailors here, and I end up being a mentor and a coach for the coaches who are spending more time on the water than I am. But I still haven't lost my love of sailing, and I try and do it as much as I can.
What are some of the most memorable, you talk about moments being out there and be like, oh, this isn't so fun in the moment. What are some of the more memorable moments you have on San Francisco Bay?
Competing in the Etchells World Championships in 2017, where there were 52 competitors, and among those were not only Olympians, but Olympic medal winners, America's Cup sailors, professionals from all over the world.
For people who don't know that boat, explain it a little bit.
Etchells is a boat. It was designed in about 1963 or so for an Olympic Games, and it didn't make the cut for the Olympic Games. But it's a phenomenal boat. It's a very technical boat. It's a slow-moving, non-planing boat. So they're very close in speed, no matter what you do to them. There's so many different strings to pull, and the rig tunes are very sensitive to change. And it's a boat that, at least 15 years ago or 20 years ago, that a person of modest means could get into. So a lot of people who worked in the sailing business ended up buying these boats so they could go out and race on their own. So a lot of sailmakers own them, and a lot of crew people own them because they can't afford to sail the 80-foot or the 60-foot race boats that they're getting paid to sail on. So it's a boat that a skilled sailor, a working sailor, could actually own and compete on their own. Today, it's one of the most competitive one design classes in the world.
So in 2017, the race was held here?
Yeah.
And you competed?
We competed. We competed. We didn't fare that well in terms of our placing, but we didn't embarrass ourselves either, and we were always in the mix.
But it sounds like it was a blast.
It was a blast just to be tacking and jiving and starting with that level of competition that we were in. It was really a thrill and a treat for everybody on my boat.
Now we're sitting here, and there's a picture over here of Oracle Team USA's catamaran from the America's Cup, foiling boat, obviously. Do you have kids coming in and say, I want to sail some of these boats that fly?
Yeah, not so much. I think more and more, you know, we can talk about the new partnership we've made with the U.S. sailing team who are going to be here and sailing NACRAs and getting exposed to that, which is going to be a new little facet of our program. But typically, our kids are, you know, they have no, majority of them, when they first get here, they have no frame of reference. And so when we put them in an 8-foot boat and, it's doing 2.5 knots upwind, it's no different for them than I would say to a lot of my learn-to-sail students who would sail in San Francisco Bay on a J-24 or something. I'd say, you know, this is going to be the fastest 5 miles an hour you ever went. And they go, what do you mean by that? And they go, well, you're going to see. And so, you know, it's exciting.
The wind's
enough
blowing in your face, and yeah, there's some splashes. And
there's,
yeah,
some splashes you're hanging
exciting,
on, you know,
yeah,
and the boat heels over a little bit, and it's
right,
an awkward feeling.
It's all new, right?
It's all brand new, yeah.
That's fantastic. Let's talk a little bit about the partnership that you have with U.S. Sailing.
Sure.
That's new, correct?
That's new, yeah, absolutely.
And what is it?
It's called the Facility for the Advancement of Sailing and Technology, FAST USA is the acronym. It was an idea that was born between the leadership of our organization, TISC, U.S. Sailing, and folks from the St. Francis Sailing Foundation, and other skilled and passionate sailors in the Bay who have been wanting to provide more opportunity for U.S. sailors to progress in the sport of sailing, i.e., you know, have a chance to win Olympic medals and those sorts of things. But I think broader picture, and more importantly, to provide an avenue for kids from all backgrounds to have a pipeline or a pathway from coming in here from urban areas in the city, having never thought they could ever sail, to seeing Olympics at the end of that sailing tunnel. All of these different partners got together, and U.S. Sailing at the time and still is trying to develop a hub of sailing where they can have a centralized training ground, providing some consistency for their sailors and their team, in a place to call home and live, and then everybody else's desire to support that. And then for them, to connect to a community center where they have access to thousands of new sailors that are coming up all the time is exciting, and it kind of makes it round, right? It kind of completes the, you know, we talk about the circle of sailing, but, you know, I'll talk about different circles of sailing. You know, it really completes the loop from, hey, this kid's never even thought, this kid's parents never thought they could do anything around the water in a boat that's not for me, to, oh my goodness, he's coming to this program, and there's Caleb Payne is training here, who won a bronze medal in the last Olympics, and is training for another one. Hopefully he's going to get gold this time. And to have those different types of populations intermixing with one another, and I think it's really good for everybody, for our kids. It shows them work ethic, and it shows them what can be done and what's possible, and gives them hope. And for the high-level athletes, it keeps them grounded. It gives them purpose. It provides them an avenue to give back. And I think that provides a level of maturity and connectedness to their community that really is important to them as well.
And this isn't just San Francisco. This center will attract sailors from around the country?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the idea is that, you know, over time that the Fast USA will become a training ground for Olympic hopefuls, so Olympic development programs, where kids might be, you know, 15-year-old kids might be coming out here for the summer or for a week. You know, young adults who might be in, you know, 21, 22 might be moving out here and training here full time in between events. And why it works well and why they pick San Francisco is San Jose and Silicon Valley is right down the road. And so all the technology pieces that they can hopefully partner with and take advantage of, one, the breadth of universities and colleges that are in the area, so that an athlete can go through a 4, 8, 12-year quad cycle and not have to miss out on their education. Because as we know, just like any other high-level athlete, for every one that makes it, there's dozens and dozens and dozens that don't. And they also need a life after sailing, or after high-level competitive sailing. And so I think the idea is to provide several avenues for people to perform at the highest levels, but also to enrich those people along the way so that they have opportunities after they're finished with that challenge.
That's really exciting.
Yeah, thank you. We're really proud of it, and we're looking forward to that partnership, as well as the development of the island and our facility long term.
You also do adaptive sailing. Can you tell me a bit about that program?
Certainly. Adaptive sailing is the term we use for sailing for people with disabilities, and it can be either physical disabilities or emotional disabilities. Currently, with the infrastructure that we have at the Treasure Island Sailing Center, meaning we're using Old Navy piers and Old Navy buildings, and a lot of times we're kind of a makeshift facility planning for a major development and a major capital campaign. We don't have a lot of the facilities or the infrastructure to support people with physical disabilities. And so we leave that to organizations like BADS, the Bay Area Association for Disabled Sailors, who runs out of South Beach. But we do a lot of partnerships with them and help them when we can. The adaptive sailing that we do here at Treasure Island Sailing Center is typically those who don't have those types of physical disabilities, but we have a program for visually impaired sailors that we've been running for years and years and years, and we partner with a group that brings people over from the Lighthouse School for the Blind, and they're called Blind Sail SF. That's a program where we'll have 6 to 8, sometimes 10 visually impaired sailors come, and we provide a volunteer for each boat, and the school provides a volunteer, and so we'll typically have 4 people on a boat, 2 visually impaired sailors and 2 sighted sailors, and once a month we do a sailing program for them. We also do a summer camp program with a group called Keen, which is Kids Enjoy Exercise Now, and they bring over groups of kids who are on certain levels of the autism spectrum. And so where these kids don't have physical disabilities, they have, you know, this emotional disability, autism. We put them in an adaptive boat, which steers with a joystick from the middle. It has a weighted centerboard, so it's very stable. And we'll put a volunteer in the boat with a child, and they learn to sail at a rate that's appropriate for them. And so what it does is it really gives them joy and pleasure. It's really amazing.
Wow. Looking into the future, what do you see for the Treasure Island Sailing Center?
Well, the future looks bright. We are in the the final stages of getting a 66-year lease signed with the city of San Francisco.
Wow.
And that's been a big push. We've really been on the city plan for quite some time, but, you know, working through the bureaucracy of the city and the, you know, all the I's to be dotted and the T's to be crossed and that sort of thing. We have our leases is at the Board of Supervisors level right now, waiting to be passed. As soon as that happens, we'll be off and running on a major capital campaign. Our physical location will shift slightly. We'll be kind of adjacent to where we are now, but our property will increase. And I think we have about 70,000 square feet of property that we'll have. And we're being given this long-term, low-cost lease from the city. And we have plans to build a 14,000 square foot, two-story building and a brand new dock system for bigger boats, a floating dock for our program boats, developing the whole kind of area that we're here in. Fast forward 5 to 7 years from now, hopefully not 10, that we have all these brand new facilities that really looks like a modern day sailing center. We really see the sailing center blossoming, not only because of the infrastructure, but also from the 19 to 25,000 new residents that'll be living on the island. There's also going to be a ferry service to the head of the island from San Francisco and expanded public transportation and busing from the East Bay that'll come here. So the island is going to be much more accessible from the outside, as well as it's going to be much more populated from the inside. That kind of explosion of population and access from everywhere else, we're hopeful and confident that it's going to provide a lot more participation.
The Cove is really the jewel that the center is built around, but with all the changes and development happening on the island, I know there's been some controversy and some questions about what development is going to happen on and in the Cove. It might be an issue going forward, no?
Certainly. It has been a delicate balance and a bit of a negotiation with the developers of the island, the future operators of the marina, the city, all the stakeholders involved, because there is only so much water space here. And I think everybody agrees that the Cove is the gem of the bay, and it's a perfect area to train small boat sailors, and especially youth sailors. It provides a very safe space, as we've talked about. And I would say that the Treasure Island Sailing Center and the city, the marina developers, reached an agreement for the size of the marina expansion that both could live with. It provides enough space, adequate amount of space for our programs to continue. We may have to adjust things over time if there's, you know, we anticipate there's going to be more boat traffic and a channel and those sorts of things. So, you know, likely we're going to have to change some of the ways that we operate to accommodate them. But of course, we want to be good neighbors. And if the city deems that there's a need for more boat space and it's good, then, you know, we'll welcome the other boaters into the area. We certainly don't want to discourage people from boating. It is a bit of a concern, but we're confident that we're going to work it out, and that eventually we'll be good neighbors and be able to share this unique body of water.
I just want to finish up by asking you, what is it that you love most about sailing on San Francisco Bay?
Oh, geez, it's exhilarating. You know, there's a lot of different conditions. People think it just blows like, you know, crazy all the time, but it doesn't. You know, if we go out in the morning, it's a little light. By 2-3, it's, you know, it's quite windy and it's cold and you're in your stuff. And when you come off the water, you look back and say, wow, did I have a really good time? You know, when I lived in Mexico half the year, and people would ask, well, where do you like sailing better? Because Puerto Vallarta, the bay there is spectacular, full of whales and manta rays and, you know, all kinds of wildlife. And it's 85 degrees and it blows maybe 14. And I'd say, well, the difference really is when I'm sailing down in Puerto Vallarta, as I'm sailing, I look around and go, man, this is so much fun. And when I'm sailing in San Francisco Bay, it's when I get off the water and I look back and go, wow, was that fun? Because while a lot of times while we're sailing in San Francisco Bay, we're so caught up in the moment because it is so windy and the conditions are a little rough, that in the moment it's so exhilarating, there's no time for retrospective thought, right? And so I would say that it's one of the most challenging places to sail, but it's also so much fun. And the culture of sailing here, the number of sailboats and the volumes of people who actually take advantage of it is quite high. You know, I mentioned I lived in Miami, and if you look in the Miami Beach Marina, you see sailboat masts, but it's a lot of powerboats, right? When you come to anywhere in the Bay Area, you're hard-pressed to find, you know, from a distance, hard-pressed to find those motorboats kind of tucked in here and there. It's dominated by sailing. It's really a sailor's mecca. And not only the act of sailing, but everywhere you look, it's a postcard. You know, the Coit Tower, the bridge, Alcatraz, you know, on and on and on. We're really fortunate to be able to live here.
Well, that's a perfect note to end on. Thank you, Travis, for your time. Really appreciate it. It was great chatting with you.
Thank you so much, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. I'm Ben Shaw, host, editor, and producer of the Out the Gate podcast.